I'm Femi Oke. Today on The String, we're going to be exploring racism that is being built into the jury system of two specific states in the United States. Here's William C. Snowden with a 101 on how juries work.
In the United States, a jury is determined in two separate phases. The first phase is the summonsing process. That's when individuals will receive a summons in the mail, letting them know that they've been called for jury service. The second phase is called voir dire, also known as jury selection. This is the conversation that takes place between the lawyers and the potential jurors to figure out who might be a good juror for that particular case. Now, we still use juries in criminal trials in the United States primarily as part of our checks and balances system. We are able to assemble 12 or 6 people on a jury, and they will sit and decide whether or not the case that's brought by the government against an accused person is worthy of a conviction or worthy of an acquittal.
So that is typically how juries work. But until 2020, in the states of Oregon and Louisiana, it was possible for just 10 jurors, not 12, to decide that somebody was guilty and for that person then to do prison time. So today on The String, we are exploring the racist past and present of non-unanimous jury verdicts. I cannot do this by myself. That is why I have Jim Miller and Jason and Nick right here with us. Jim Miller, please introduce yourself to The String audience. Good to see you.
Good to see you. My name is Jamila Johnson. I am the managing attorney at the Promise of Justice Initiative. And my job, quite literally, is to help the state of Louisiana figure out how to heal the injuries after more than 120 years of a Jim Crow law infecting its jury system.
So good to have you. Hello, Jason. Please introduce yourself to our viewers watching around the world.
I am Jason Williams. I'm a native New Orleanian, and I was recently elected this past January as the district attorney of Orleans Parish to upend a system that has been racist and sexist by design.
And Nick, good to have you here on The String. Please introduce yourself to our viewers.
Yeah, I'm a criminal justice reporter in New Orleans for The Lens. We're a nonprofit investigative newsroom. And I recently produced a documentary along with Al Jazeera, Fault Lines, on non-unanimous jury convictions.
Oh, we're going to get into that in just a moment. But first, let me tell you, viewers, you're watching right now, and if you're watching on YouTube, use the comment section. There will be many things that you want to ask questions about. You can do so right here and be part of today's show. Let us just start with Jim Crow juries. Jamila, can you unpack that phrase? What does that mean even?
Sure. Yeah. So after the Civil War, more than half of the state of Louisiana was black, but white Louisianans were afraid of a shift in power. And so they put in a lot of mechanisms to try to ensure supremacy of the white race. And in 1898, the state of Louisiana had a constitutional convention. They brought a whole group of white legislators together, and they found a number of different ways that they could explicitly put in place ways to injure black Louisianans and to give power to white Louisianans. And one way they did that was the Jim Crow jury, where historically you would need 12 jurors, a unanimous jury, to convict someone. They wanted to silence the voices of black jurors and convict more black people. So they made a rule that said if 10 people said you were guilty and 2 said you were innocent, you were still going to go to prison.
Jason, so I describe this as racism being built into the jury system in Louisiana and in Oregon. Was I overstating that case?
No, absolutely not. For far too long, our city and our state have been ground zero for the unfairness of the criminal legal system for black and brown people. This was not an accident. This was not negligent. This was a choice in the 1800s to silence certain voices on juries. And I wanted this office to send a very clear message that it is no longer a Jim Crow era office.
On my laptop, I've got the current Fault Lines episode that is running on Al Jazeera right now, the Jim Crow convictions. Nick, I want you to tell us the story of Brandon Jackson, because this is not a theoretical legal situation that we're talking about. Real lives are being impacted. What do we need to know about Brandon?
So, yeah, Brandon Jackson was convicted of armed robbery in 1997, and his trial at his trial, he was convicted by a non-unanimous jury. So 10 people voted to convict him, and 2 people voted not to convict. So in any other state except for Oregon, this would have resulted in a mistrial, and he would have had the right to a new trial. In Louisiana, that he was convicted. He was sentenced initially to life in prison, although no one was injured during this armed robbery. And that sentence was later reduced to 40 years, but he remains in prison now, 25 years later. So that's sort of the short version of Brandon's story.
Yeah, I want to bring in Brandon Jackson here, because in the Fault Lines documentary that you worked with Al Jazeera on, Brandon is interviewed while he is incarcerated, and this is how he tells his own story. Have a listen, have a look.
I don't even think that it's a word that I can describe on how I've been feeling for 25 years, knowing that I've been incarcerated for something that I didn't do. They don't even have a word in the dictionary. And I've been waking up like that since 1996. I think about it all day, every day. I'm 49 now. I'll be 50 December the 9th.
So you have spent all of your young adult life into now in prison.
Yeah, you can basically say I grew up in prison.
Listen, I'm just looking here at my laptop at a headline. Supreme Court rules jury verdicts must be unanimous. Why is this not the end of the story, Jason?
Well, it doesn't address retroactivity. They're talking about what happens with cases that come from that ruling on, but they don't go back and look at and try to reckon with or begin repairing 120 plus years of injustice. And that retroactivity is truly what must happen. I mean, Brett Kavanaugh described this as a brutal pillar of Jim Crow. And when you look at just the bodies and lives that were ruined when there were at least one or two jurors who thought the person was innocent of the crime that was committed. In one instance, one Jermaine Hudson, we exonerated him because of the alleged victim in his case came forward after he heard about us starting this work. And he said the crime never even was committed. He lied to his father, who then called the police. And this man went to jail for an armed robbery that never even occurred.
I mean, cases like Jermaine's, we represented Mr. Hudson, we represent Mr. Jackson, and our office brought the case to the U.S. Supreme Court that found non-unanimous jury verdicts to be unconstitutional. And I think all of our clients, if you'd ask any one of them, or Rashad Green, who your office also brought home, if you ask them, when the U.S. Supreme Court tells you a law is unconstitutional and tells you that it's a Jim Crow law that was based on racism, they expect that they would get some sort of remedy. And what District Attorney Williams was talking about here is that in retroactivity in the United States, we don't always make sure that that happens. And we're hoping that at some point in time, either through the legislature or through our court system, these folks will get a remedy.
Yeah, Brandon Jackson is one of about 1,500 of people who are still in prison on these non-unanimous jury convictions. Because the United States Supreme Court did not mandate retroactivity for the state, he is not entitled to a new trial. Now there are other ways to go about ensuring that he gets a new trial. In the state legislature, they could pass a law, which Jamila is actively working towards, but this last legislative session, they declined to do it. And then another way is if the district attorney in a specific parish decides that they are independently going to go back and grant new trials for these people. And that's something that D.A. Williams has begun to do and is sort of in the process of reviewing those cases. And we can get into the details of that, I'm sure. But in Bossier Parish, where Brandon Jackson was convicted, the DA is not doing that and has said that he is opposed to a new trial for Brandon.
Yeah, I've actually got a letter, which I'll show you in just a moment, which the letter is just sent to Fault Lines producer Jeremy Young. It is impossible to speculate with any degree of certainty whether Mr. Jackson's verdict would have been any different had the jury been charged with unanimity. My office will not vacate and retry convictions solely because of a non-unanimous verdict. Nick, in this reporting that happened on the Jim Crow convictions in Fort Lyons, we hear from a black juror. Jamila, you're about to say something, and then I'm going to hear from the black juror. Oh, yeah. Because it's the pressure of, here is my voice, here are my doubts, but because you don't have to have all 12 come to the same decision, Jamila, go ahead, pick up.
Yeah, I mean, in this exact situation, we do have a juror who says he did not believe that Brandon Jackson is guilty. And so to have a response like that from the district attorneys and say, we don't know what could have been in the minds of these jurors. These jurors voted not guilty. We know what they voted for. And so to say that you're not going to look at these convictions because you can't speculate as to why someone voted not guilty, they voted not guilty because they didn't feel the state met its burden of proof.
All right, Jamila, let's hear that voice. Here we go. This is the juror, one of two, who wasn't convinced that Brandon Jackson was guilty.
No one said that they knew it was Brandon. They recognized him. They knew his mannerisms. No one was able to say enough to convince me that they were sure that it was him that committed the robbery.
Did you express your point of view to the jurors?
I'm sure I at least made one statement and it was blown down. I mean, they dismissed it.
And when they dismissed your concerns, how did that make you feel?
I felt like, okay, I voiced my opinion. And I was hoping that maybe what I said had sunk in on someone and made them think about it and could change their mind, even if they didn't want to speak out in front of the group. But from the verdict, that did not happen.
So, Jason, on YouTube, Drift says, this is as common as you've been talking, Jim Crow never really went away. What's your pushback, your thoughts about that, and how are you trying to make sure that the past is not being repeated in the present?
Well, he's absolutely right. Racism and sexism, for that matter, really found very fertile land here in this soil. You know, the rest of the country outside of Oregon realized that. And we're talking about unanimous juries today, but that is just one example of how racism is baked into the system. There are a number of other situations and circumstances in which people have had promises broken in terms of plea deals, folks known as 10-6ers or the forgotten men. There's the overuse of the habitual offender law in predominantly black parishes. So he is absolutely right. The racism and sexism is in the system by design. It is designed that there is protection and service to one demographic and controlling, over-policing and over-prosecuting for another demographic. It is very American. But it is up to us to begin to address it, reckon with it, and dismantle it and make it fair.
I want to bring in the voice of Glenn Davis into this conversation because this is not a hopeless conversation. There is work that is being done right now. So Glenn Davis is an exoneree, and he told us this story just a few hours ago. Have a look, have a listen.
I was wrongfully arrested in August of 1992 on charge of first-degree murder, along with my two co-defendants. A year later, we were convicted of second-degree murder by a non-unanimous jury, which only consisted of three blacks. The only two black women on the jury voted not guilty, making our verdict a 10-2 guilty verdict. We were sentenced to life in prison at Angola without the possibility of parole, probation, or suspension of sentence. We were exonerated after Innocence Project New Orleans took on our case.
Jamila, using the law to defeat the law there, mm-hmm. What tools do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's been happening in Louisiana in the last year is pretty unheard of. So we put together a group of lawyers in our office, Promise of Justice Initiative, but also 780 volunteer lawyers from law firms from Seattle to Singapore. And we said we were going to find each of these people with a non-unanimous jury verdict, and we were going to file for them. And they may not have had lawyers for years and years and years before, but we were going to find a way to get them a lawyer and get them filed. And of the 1,500 men and women who we believe have non-unanimous jury verdicts, these Jim Crow jury verdicts in Louisiana, we were able to represent 1,049 of them. And that is a huge undertaking and a way to create that voice and to create that change. But ultimately, what we're seeing now is there has to be more. There has to be more people involved in this. And that's where legislative change really makes the difference. And then having a district attorney like District Attorney Williams, who was willing to not only campaign on this, but then turn around and start actually bringing home our clients and the people who are sitting in prison and had to watch the events unfold over the summer of 2020 and the protests of erase, and then wonder where their protest was.
Nick, I'm thinking about what's happening here is an attempt to fix the wrongs of the past. How does your reporting, how does this, the Jim Crow convictions, Fault Lines film, where does that play in? What difference will that make?
Well, I mean, I think, Jamila is talking about the work that her organization is doing and the tremendous, just volume of cases that they're dealing with. But, the reality is it's going to be a really uphill battle for Jamila's organization and for these men and women in still in prison on split jury verdicts. The legislature, I think, is reluctant to go back and force prosecutors to look at these cases. Mm-hmm. There's an association of district attorneys that has quite a bit of power and is opposed to that. The Louisiana State Supreme Court could also step in and do something, but it seems, as far as I can tell, I think somewhat unlikely that that's going to happen. And so far, D.A. Williams is really the only prosecutor in this state to take this on. There's another prosecutor who's looking at some cases. It seems slightly more selectively. So how exactly these individuals still in prison on this law are going to get a new trial or get some remedy is, I think. I think it's going to be hard, and they, I think even if you look at
everything is hard when it comes to Jim Crow.
Indeed. But I just think that the challenges are definitely great, and the point being is that Brandon Jackson's case I think is representative of that. There are certainly people coming home, but Brandon remains in prison, and it remains to be seen whether or not he'll get a new trial.
Oh, it remains to be seen. That's an awful, awful phrase to use over someone who's been incarcerated for so long. All right, so a very pointy question. Jason, I'm putting the very pointy question to you from one of our viewers watching right now. Has the New Orleans DA, Jason, addressed all Jim Crow convictions? If not, what's the holdup?
No, we have not. We developed the Civil Rights Division within our office to go through all of them. And we're still working through that process because it would be a compounded tragedy. For example, if we had pushed Mr. Jermaine Hudson into a plea deal to just get him out of jail for a crime that he did not commit, even worse, for a crime that never even occurred. So we are reviewing all of these cases, but we're reviewing them for wrongful conviction and not just assuming that a person was guilty. But to piggyback on what Nick was saying, I am absolutely convinced. I mean, you have glass half full, you have glass half empty. I am very happy to have a glass and be very happy to be able to build off of the work that Promise started. I'm convinced that this work will be catalytic. I think that once the human mind is stretched, it doesn't revert back to its original form or its old way of thinking. And I think we, not just we in this office, but the big we, PJI and other strong organizations that help change the law and bring this to a vote, and journalists like Nick who care about telling complete, historically accurate news stories. This is what's very quite literally changing the dynamics of a debate about what it means to reckon with the past and right and confront the sins of the past. It's a larger effort than just criminal legal, the criminal legal system. It's a larger effort than just me or Promise, but we've got to change the culture and the thinking of the public. And I think it's starting to happen. Nick mentioned D.A. Stewart in Caddo Parish beginning to review some of these cases, whether he looks at two or three to start off. I am convinced, and I think Jamila would agree with this, once he looks and sees what is happening when he peels into that onion, it's going to want to make him look even more.
Yeah. And those aren't the only two DAs in the state of Louisiana who are looking at these cases. We have conversations about once every 2 weeks now with the new DA where we walk through the cases in their jurisdiction and try to create a mechanism that either parallels what Orleans Parish is doing by looking at all of the cases or really has the conversation about what specifically can be done in their jurisdiction. So we're seeing growth across the state, but not fast enough, and there's not enough of a recognition that these folks were convicted unconstitutionally.
And
really the remedy for that should be a new trial.
I might be naive here, Jason, you can tell me if I'm being naive here, but we're talking about 1,500 cases. That could be cleared in a year, couldn't it? They could be
Jamila said something when Nick was talking. She said, it's hard. Everything's hard in this work. That's true. You need man and woman power. You need resources.
Yeah.
PGI needs more resources. The smaller DA's offices need resources. That's why we need legislators to fund this work.
Yeah.
We need to change the law. It doesn't have to be the DA. It could be the parole board.
So some of the problem is logistics. It's like, do we have enough person power? Do we have enough money to get this done? Do we have enough resources to do retrials? So some of it is logistics. And meanwhile, people are stuck in prison because logistics of righting the wrongs of the past are complicated or hard, as Jamila says. Jamila, I need your legal brain for a moment here. In a sentence, Ramos versus Louisiana.
Yeah. Ramos versus Louisiana found Jim Crow juries to be unconstitutional, non-unanimous jury verdicts.
All right. So that is a beautiful setup. Thank you, Jamila, for Professor Kaplan, who is talking about revisiting these cases and revisiting them to see if you can actually just right the wrongs. Here she is.
Here in Oregon, the only other state besides Louisiana that had non-unanimous juries until 2020, when the United States Supreme Court ruled them unconstitutional, has hundreds of people behind bars based on non-unanimous jury convictions. Our Supreme Court will be addressing the issue in 2022, but in the meantime, the best way to get help and relief and justice for the people behind bars is to pass a law here in Oregon in our state legislature that would provide retroactivity under Ramos versus Louisiana.
So, Guess, I just want to share you some of the thoughts from our viewers who are watching on YouTube right now. This is so sad and disgusting. America is still unjust in convictions against black people. And then another one here. This is heartbreaking. Thank you so much for sharing your work, Jason, Nick and Jamila. You want to find out more about the Jim Crow convictions, I can highly recommend the current episode of Fault Lines called The Jim Crow Convictions. It's online right now. Just going to move this up a little bit so you can see more about this film and watch it either online or on Al Jazeera. Thank you so much for being part of today's show. Really appreciate you. Jamila, Jason and Nick, I will be following your work very closely. On YouTube, thank you so much for being part of today's program, for your incisive questions and comments. I will see you next time. Take care, everybody.